Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Welcome to this week's episode of Zach on Film, where it's Steven and I.
Hello.
We have a very important discussion this week, Steven.
Oh, we do have a big important discussion.
Because, you know, it seems about at least once a year now, it's, oh, such and such film is one of the highest grossing films of all time.
Yes.
And it's happened 3 times this year, where 3 releases are in the top 10, mm-hmm. with Jurassic World coming at number 3.
Mm-hmm.
Was it Fast and Furious 42 7 or something?
It came in at, if we're just looking at domestic grosses in the top 10, Fast and the Furious, what it did was, Furious 7, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It made over $1 billion worldwide
right.
very quickly. It's
yep.
only made $351 million domestically, which puts it in the all-time domestic grosses list at number 30.
Mm-hmm.
Avengers Age of Ultron is in at number 8. And then, of course, Jurassic World is in at number 3. And these are just domestic grosses.
Yeah,
these aren't worldwide grosses, which is not what... I guess we could look at worldwide grosses. It would have worldwide Avatar, Titanic, Jurassic World, Marvel's The Avengers, Furious 7, and Avengers Age of Ultron
yeah.
are the top 6.
Right. And so 3 of those came in
just now.
Year,
and there's some of them are still in theaters.
Which is pretty amazing.
Right.
But... that comes out with a news article we're really focusing on this week is that movie tickets have hit an all-time high in the past quarter. Quarter 2, 2015, ticket prices averaged out, I believe, at $8.61 a ticket.
I believe that's what it is, too, although, let's see. Yeah, the average is $8.61 in the United States for the second quarter of 2015, according to the National Association of Theater Owners. That is up 3.4% from $8.33 percent from last year, or 33 cents, and 6% from the first quarter average of $8.12.
Yeah.
So ticket prices continue to climb. A lot of this, interestingly, has to go on to more people seeing films in 3D, which
right.
I found was really kind of surprising.
That did surprise me. And now it wasn't just ticket prices are higher, but people are actually willingly paying more for a ticket to see it in a different space.
Right. And that's fine. Matthew said he was on one of the social media outlets saying that he went and saw Ant-Man in 3D and thought it was great.
Really?
And I'm like, okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't find any real additional experience benefit from going and seeing a 3D movie myself. Now, that's me personally. A lot of people may find some enjoyment in seeing that. But I just, it's not my cup of tea.
I would say of the 3D movies I've seen this year, which I believe are just Mad Max and Terminator, the 3D in my experience is a lot better than where we were, you know, 3 or 4 years ago,
yes,
where everything
yes.
was popping out your
mm-hmm,
face. It
mm-hmm.
is, they've really focused on just creating a depth in the space. But like you, for me, the surcharge to see 3D to just get that depth, while it is interesting to see and how they use it, I don't know if it's worth it quite yet.
Yeah, well, in fact, what is the movie that's coming up? Oh, Fantastic Four.
Mm-hmm.
They decided to scrap the entire 3D conversion process.
Mm.
They were just like, I think it was the director's decision, was just like, nope, we're not going to do this. And so they just scrapped it all, and they're not going to release it in 3D. Now, of course, there's more people who want to see stuff in IMAX in a larger format as well.
Right.
So those things kind of play into that demand is increasing the ticket prices. And I guess that brings into the question of, well, where's all that money going?
Oh, what are you
well,
what are you thinking?
So, you know, a lot of people think that the theater owners get a lot of it, and then the rest goes back to the distributor.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you look at the history of motion pictures and you look at where theater ticket prices used to go, there used to be something where the deal was, okay, we're going to pay you, the theater owner, enough to cover your nut for the for that week, meaning how much of your employees are going to cost, how much is it going to cost to, you know, do your electricity, and all that needed to be calculated in, and so you could get that part covered from your movie release. Then after that, the studio would take 90% of the ticket price. And that went on for a long time. And in fact, it worked on a sliding scale. So the first week, the theater owners or the movie distributor would take 90%. The second week, the distributor would take 80%, and so on and so on and so forth. So what ended up happening was, and this was in my day growing up, there was an incentive for the theater owner to keep the theater, to keep the movie in the theater for 10 weeks. Because after 10 weeks, the theater owner got 100% of that money for the movie. They didn't have to pay anything back to the distributor. Well, then, of course, the distributor, they want to keep pumping out more movies because it's to their advantage to make most of their money up front. And so they changed the model of how tickets prices are broken down. I want to say 10 years ago, I think, is what it was. It was in the early 2000s. Let's put it that way. And in that, they basically, the distributor takes between 48 and 63% of the ticket price.
Okay.
So if we're talking about our theater here in town, a $5 ticket is what we pay generally. It's a cheap theater.
Yeah.
And they market themselves as a cheap theater. You know, the distributor is taking $2.50 up to $3.50, something like that, per ticket sale. The nut is not covered by the distributor anymore. The theater now has to take care of air conditioning and employees and all of that kind of stuff. And so their incentive is, hey, no matter what, I'm always going to get the remainder of what's left after this distribution agreement deal.
Right.
I would imagine something like our theater is probably getting the remainder of the 63%. And a theater like a chain like AMC, which, you know, here's the other thing that we can talk about too. AMC, they're probably getting the better part of that,
probably
of that deal.
Yeah.
You know, 50% there. Yeah. They're, because they're a big chain. And so, you know, that kind of, has gone on for a long time, but the distributor has realized that if we can, if we make 80% of our, budget, or I'm sorry, if we make 80% of our gross in the first 2 weeks, then it's in our best interest to continue to put out new movies so that there's a new movie in the theater every week, so it has that 2 week shelf life. And that's why, years ago when we were first doing Zach on Film, we talked about how you could calculate up how much money a movie would make over its 10 week run, and theater owners could predict how much money they would make. Distributors would be able to predict how much money they make. But today it's whatever happens in the first weekend, it drops in half the second week. And after that, unless the movie is a runaway hit like Jurassic World or Inside Out or Avengers or Fast and the Furious, Furious 7, it's really kind of unpredictable to what's going to happen after that second week. But that's where our money is going today. And you're like, well, still $3.50 and you've made $1 billion worldwide. That's got to be good for the theaters. And it can be good for the theaters. It's got to be good for the studios as well.
Right.
To an extent. Today, studios, and this is a report from 2009, we should have a whole big long discussion sometime about Hollywood accounting and creative accounting.
Okay.
Because no one really knows how much it costs to make a money, make a movie. So when you go over to Box Office Mojo, for example,
right,
and we look at the cost of the production of, let's see, let's go look at Ant-Man. So Ant-Man production budget, it says $130 million. Well, it's already made that in worldwide grosses. But we don't know for sure it's $130 million because that stuff is really closed out by the studios because I don't want to – they kind of cheat because they don't want people to know exactly how much they're making or how much something cost, because then that means people on the back end – will come up and say, hey, you owe me some more money,
or I need to be paid really more. Profited more than you're saying you
are. And so a lot of, you know, you can have a lot of fixed costs, like the talent costs money. the below the line costs have money. But then where they really hide a lot of stuff is in the print and advertising campaigns. And we don't have very many theaters now that still do film projection. I think it's less than 7% of the theaters in the United States still use film. Mm-hmm. But on average, you're spending between $1,500 and $3,000 per print if you have to do it on film, which is why so many people have switched over to digital.
Right.
But then the remainder of that is all spent on advertising. And we've talked before that it often you have to, whatever you see as the production budget, you often have to double that just to give you the idea of how much advertising goes into something.
Right. And that's a number that's came from, I think Kevin Smith talked a lot about that. And other people yes. have said that's pretty much the standard for marketing a film.
Yeah. And one thing that I read, not too long ago, it says that under the Hollywood system, the average, now we're not talking about the big blockbusters like Jurassic World mm-hmm. or Ant-Man or anything like that, but on average, a movie needs to make $186 million in gross revenue. That's before the theater takes their cut, before everything else, needs to make $186 million in gross revenue just to break even for the cost of the movie and the printing and advertising campaign. So if you look at $130 million on the production budget for Ant-Man, probably, you know, they'd have to make, you know, $186 million just to break even on that. Domestically.
Domestically,
Ant-Man going into week two, end of week two, has only made $109 million domestically. So it's a little interesting to see where the money gets divided up in this studio system, in this Hollywood system. And the only time we find out how much a movie actually makes, and again, these are all estimates.
Right. Everything's, yeah, estimate.
The only way that we ever find out how much a movie actually makes or how much a movie actually costs is if somebody sues the studio. And I believe Sam Raimi sued Sony over Spider-Man, one of the Spider-Man films, because he felt like he was not getting all of his points that he was supposed to. And they took it to court and they had to reveal the entire production budget of Spider-Man. And I believe this was in 2009. When did Spider-Man 3?
Yeah.
I believe it was right around then, because that's where a lot of these people started basing all of their numbers and averages on, is from this 2009 lawsuit where they actually said, here's how much money it cost to actually make this movie. And so we really don't know. I'm pretty sure it was the Spider-Man 3 lawsuit. So we really don't know how much the actual profit is being made by the studios.
And so do you think it's always in their benefit to not really give the public the true dollar amount?
I mean, we estimate.
It seems like it's more of a success that way.
You know, there are a couple of agencies out there that do ticket sales reporting. And really, in the last couple of years, there has been only one place that really tabulates how a movie is doing on the weekend. And that's how we know on Sunday morning how much a movie is made for the weekend, even though the weekend isn't over yet. So there's that kind of accounting. But since we don't know how much a movie cost to make, we can give it a rough estimate. We don't know how much money the studio, whether they made a profit or loss on that movie. And that's where the creative accounting comes in. And it's a wacky thing, because I believe Return of the Jedi has still never made money by the way that they have itemized things and put costs onto things and those kinds of stuff. So 30 years after Return of the Jedi has come out, it has still not gone in the black.
But you think that's because they're doing some creative accounting to
They do a lot of that. So for example, anytime that there's any kind of publicity that has to go into Return of the Jedi. So if there's an anniversary showing and we're flying George Lucas out there, well, that doesn't go to the cost of the studio flying George Lucas out there. That goes to the cost of Return of the Jedi. So if you're flying George Lucas or the crew or whoever out to promote, Return of the Jedi, that gets charged to the Return of the Jedi account. Likewise, everybody that flew out for the San Diego Comic-Con, the concerts that Disney put on, all the big executives that went there, that is a cost that's being applied to Star Wars Episode 7.
Interesting. Because then they could show not as much of profit.
Then that means that if you are someone like J.J. Abrams, who may be getting a percentage of the net, well, you may say, well, sorry, J.J., we can't pay you because this movie has never made money. And that's the okay. that's the net, not gross.
Right.
Gross is how much you actually took in. Net is after all expenses. So it's really fascinating. I wish I had all my lecture notes here because we did talk in the Star Wars class about a year or so ago, 2 years ago, I guess. Mm-hmm. We talked about creative accounting, and I've got some really specific examples, and I think it was Spider-Man and Return of the Jedi and a couple of others where how can these movies have never made any money when people are paying $8.61 mm-hmm. to go see the movie, and we know that it's made $1 billion, and how do you say that it isn't making any money? And so when you look at where all that money goes to, suddenly it starts to make sense. And when you see some of the creative accounting practices, and listeners can probably go and just do a search for creative accounting in Hollywood, and they can find all sorts of fascinating data on that. Mm-hmm. So it's incredible.
So do you think overall that studios aren't making as much money now? And that's why they're not putting out as many films.
No.
Which is a whole culture in itself of why.
If I'm trying to find it now that you mentioned it, Variety had a report that talked about the tentpole films, these big budget films like right. Jurassic World, that actually show that the tentpole films really are a good thing, and that they actually are making the studios lots and lots of money if they do it right. Look, I'm seeing one from 2012. I could have swore that there was one from just a couple of weeks ago from 2015.
So
here it is. Peter Bogdanovich pushes for non-Titanic tent poles is a story over in Variety. This is dated. I don't see the date on here. March 18th, 2015.
Hmm. And so the gist of it is that these big films are allowing the studios more budget room to fund smaller films.
Yeah, and that's the idea of what the tent pole is. If you think about a circus tent, which is where this analogy comes from,
right?
You've got a main pole that comes up into the center of the ring and supports the entire tent, and then around the edge you have all these little smaller poles that help support the edges of the tent. And the idea is the big tent pole allows you to get a bigger coverage for your tent.
Mm-hmm.
Which in a sense means that you can support a lot of smaller films. So Jurassic World making $1 trillion or the Avengers making $1 trillion means that now the studio can say, well, we've got some wiggle room to go and spend this money on Zack and the Giant Peach
mm-hmm.
or Zack and the Giant. What's your favorite? Zack and the Giant Salsa Dish.
There we go.
That's what it would be.
Yes.
And they're like, we don't know how much this is going to make, but we've got some money to play. Here's $20 million, Zach. Mm-hmm. Go do your salsa movie. Or in the case of the Lego movie, we don't know how this is going to do. We'll give you whatever it was, $85 million. Mm-hmm. And maybe it'll be a success. And people will find a film that they probably didn't think that they were going to find the first time.
Right. Because I guess that is the big thing about these smaller budget films is that maybe a couple times a year, at least once a year, you get a small to mid-range budget movie that does real big money, and that pays off huge for the studio. And so that in turn can continue them betting on these smaller
films. Well, and it gives, you know, the success of Godzilla from a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. which was, I would say, was a success for Legendary Pictures.
Yeah.
The success of that gave them enough money to go to the Schmosh boys and say, here's $20 million. I don't even know if it was $20 million.
We looked at the budget one time. It's really small.
Here's the $15 you need to go make your money, your movie, which means that someone like the Smosh Boys can go and do a micro budget movie that they would not have otherwise been able to release.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good. In the end, that is a good thing. And so when people look at a ticket price and they say, man, $10 for a ticket, that's really expensive for me to go see Ant-Man or Jurassic World or Frozen or whatever the movie is that you're excited to see. But remember where that money goes to. It doesn't just go to Frozen or Ant-Man or Avengers. It's going to the studio so that they can produce other content.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes with any kind of endeavor, whether it is supporting a podcast, supporting your cable channel like HBO. People want to watch HBO shows. Well, your cable subscription goes up so that the HBO can produce those shows like Ballers or Game of Thrones or True Detective mm-hmm. that people want to see. So I'm not too upset about the idea that the ticket prices are you know, close to $10 on average.
All right.
What I want to see is that more people are given the opportunity to make films and not just, well, we're making all this money. We're going to keep our profits around to make our shareholders happy. And we're only still going to release these big budget movies. If the studios were doing this, I think people would have a lot more problems with that.
Mm-hmm.
But now that we see that they are using the money to make smaller films, to invest in bringing in international movies to the United States and release, like Sony Classic Pictures does this a lot with movies from China, then I think it makes a lot of sense to say, hey, I'm willing to make this investment in the studio, in this movie. Now, granted, I may like it, may not like it, but at least it's making sure that other movies can be made. I guess that's a weird way of thinking about it, because I think when people pay their $10,
right,
they're just thinking, I'm coming here to watch Ant-Man.
Right. But there is a giant machine that you're kind of throwing $10 into that's going to spit out a lot of other things.
Right.
It's going to take that $10, split it up,
right,
and you're going to get a lot more from it.
You know, the success of, really the success of Iron Man, the first Iron Man movie, allowed them to produce the other Avengers movies in the, you know, show proof of concept that these movies can be made. When the first Avengers movies made $1 billion, a lot of that is going back into, I don't want to say a lot, but there's a great deal of it that's going back into the Phase 2 movies.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And the Phase 2 movies are going to help finance the Phase 3 movies. Yeah. And so on and so on and so forth.
Can you imagine if Avengers only would have made like $750 million or something? They probably wouldn't have had the guts to take risks on like Ant-Man or Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah. Or because they're probably thinking ahead, because by the end of the Avengers, we already knew that Phase 2 was coming.
Sure.
So more than likely, the success of the Avengers said, hey, we can take a risk on Doctor Strange.
Sure. Okay.
Or we can take this risk and do a Daredevil series for Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably more where that's coming from, as opposed to Avengers funded Phase 2. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, it's there. And so I think maybe people need to think about that in a broader sense of, I'm giving my studio, my money to the studios so that they can continue to make movies, hopefully movies that I enjoy. Mm-hmm. Now, you're not going to always get that.
No.
I mean,
no.
I think when we look at the Zach on Film summer run, they've been fairly disappointing for me.
They have not been great. There's only been a few standouts.
Mm-hmm.
Even Jurassic World was an okay movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then even Avengers, something like that, not very good. But like you said, that it is a strange way to think about it, because it's not like you're saying you're giving Marvel $10 and saying, I like what you're doing.
Right.
Continue doing it. You're giving this money to a studio or a theater, which then gets split up and then split up. And then it
and the other thing, too, is, when we talk about a movie studio, Warner Brothers Pictures, they may make some movies, but they cannot distribute their own movies. Disney films cannot distribute their own movies.
Mm-hmm.
They have to go through a distribution company, which is going to take its cut.
Right.
In the case of Disney, it's Buena Vista is their distribution company, which is really owned by Disney. But because of the vertical integration breakdown back in the 1950s or whatever it was, you can't have that monopoly anymore. So they have to go through these distributors. And so when you look at who's distributing the film, oftentimes you're like, oh, well, Warner Brothers is distributing this movie, but it's actually produced by a different company or made by a different company.
Right. That's why you get the six different studio logos at the beginning of your film.
Yes. So when you look at your ticket, small part of it is going to the theater.
Yeah.
And again, if the movie doesn't do good, the theater may not even make their nut. They may not even be able to pay for the cost of the air conditioning. Or in some cases, our theater, it took them a long time to convert every screen to digital.
Or in the case of our theater, someone that knows how to run a projector.
Runs a projector, yes. So it's in the best interest of the theater owner to get a big movie in, depending on what their contact person is giving them, to get a big movie in and make as much money as they can up front, and then hope for another big movie coming in right away to cover those costs. But in order to make up that extra cost, you're paying a $5 ticket. This is literally what happens to me. You pay $5 for me. Mm-hmm. I think it's $5 for Mason too.
Probably.
So $10 in tickets and then $30 in concessions.
Yeah.
And that's so, I mean, that's really there for the theater owners.
Oh, yeah.
And as much as I hate paying $5 for a 32-ounce soda or more, whatever it is, I have to think that I'm paying the person behind the counter's salary.
Yeah.
So that the next time I come here, I can ensure that they are fulfilling my order quickly. And surprisingly, that the jalapeno container is full of jalapenos when I order nachos, which has actually been happening the last couple of times. So there you go.
Yeah. The economics of a movie theater, just in general.
Yeah.
It's like, so, if you really want to support your theater and keep it open, you have to buy concessions.
Yeah, you do. So you've got your ticket. A small portion of it goes to the theater. The rest of it goes to the distributor. The distributor then has to pay the studio, who then uses that money to pay their actors, their directors, all of their below-the-line people. They have to pay for their printing and advertising. When I say print, I mean film prints, not, you know, paper print. Mm-hmm. They have to do P&A with their printing and advertising. They have to go into all of their marketing for getting people shuttled around and shipped around. That money gets divided up. Your dollar goes by pretty quick. And then at the end, of course, there are other revenue streams for the studio, including home release, video release, DVD release, movies on the airplane, on demand, on demand in hotels and pay-per-views, and then finally broadcast television and cable. And of course, merchandise too. Mm-hmm. So they have a lot of other ways to generate revenue. But then again, merchandise has its own costs as well. Yeah. So, you know, it's the finances of movies is very fascinating to look at. And I'm glad you got a get a business minor?
Yeah. Entrepreneurship minor.
Yeah. I'm glad that you did, because then you can start understanding where a lot of this money
you told
goes
me to.
Yeah.
You told us
I did.
All.
I told you all.
Us all my freshman year to get one. I'm like, okay.
I said, if you want to get into. And I'm serious. If you want to get into any kind of broadcast career, whether it is a whether it's an on-camera talent, whether it is an actor, whether a script writer, producer, director, whatever it is that you want to do, it will be in your best interest to have some kind of business administration minor, accounting minor, so that you can deal with all of the business side of doing your production. Because a lot of people are just like, hey, let's go grab a camera and then go shoot our movie and we'll be internet millionaires on the YouTube. But then suddenly you get a flag from YouTube that says, this music has been deemed copyright, or you're using a clip from something that's been flagged for copyright. And you're like, well, what does all this mean? How do I deal with this? How do I license this music? Your business administration minor is going to be so helpful to you. And I think that, and I'm glad you did that.
I literally have another job now because I have that minor.
Yes, there you go. Yeah. There you go.
So do you think, from a financial standpoint, the movie industry is in a good place right now?
I think so. I mean, if you look at the quarterly reports, let me look this up really quick. I believe that the quarterlies came out just recently for the studios, and they were all doing very, very well. Mm-hmm. Including, you know, studios that were near bankruptcy a couple of years ago. I don't see it now, but you can go look it up.
Yeah.
So I think the industry is doing a really good job right now. I think the thing that would help the American film industry more is making sure that there are more jobs in America. And in order to do that, you have to continue to make movies in America. And again, I love Canada. I love New Zealand. I love Australia. I love all of our countries all the way around the world, whether they like us or not. Mm-hmm. I love everybody. But it troubles me when an American company says, we're going to go save $20 million on the cost of this film by going to Australia, which means that all the grips, all the gaffers, all the electricians, all the makeup artists, all these people in Hollywood or California are not getting jobs because they're going to people overseas. I don't really have a problem with other countries making money, because that's fine too. But there are a lot of talented people who can't get jobs because the productions are going out of country. Mm-hmm. And that's the same for whether it's a big motion picture or if you're talking about a CW television show. So, but I think overall, I think the industry is doing just fine.
Yeah. I mean, like going back to the 3D theaters,
mm-hmm.
I was surprised when the movie ticket report came out. They said movies like Jurassic Park or Jurassic World, Mad Max, and San Andreas made 40% of their open weekend box office from 3D movies. And so I don't know if that is a, and I, this would be really hard to know, if it is a thing of people want to see the movie so bad they will go see a 3D just because it fits their schedule more, or if people are actually seeking out the 3D experience.
That's a good question, because I don't have enough information on the movie showtimes to be able to judge that. I know here in our town, 3D movie usually shows first by about a half hour than the 2D movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the 3D movie is in the bigger theater and the nicer theater, whereas the 2D movie is a couple doors down in the not so great theater where they either don't know how to reduce the size of the picture to make it fit on the screen, or they don't know how to enlarge the size of the picture to make it fill the screen. So
it's catch 22.
It is. It really is at this theater. But the good thing is, and I don't know if you saw this, but our theater got bought by AMC.
I did see that. They got bought out.
What do you think of that?
I think...
because it used to be a Dickinson. We used to be a Dickinson theater.
Yeah, and then it was something else.
And then it got sold off to Starplex.
Well, no, it switched owners twice in the last year.
Yeah.
So it was like something, and then it was Starplex.
Right.
And now it'll be some... because all of Star... did all of Starplex get bought up by
AMC? All of Starplex got bought up by AMC.
Yeah.
Which is only, from what if I remember correctly, something only like 35...
it's not a huge
35 theaters.
Yeah, it's mostly Midwest states. I'm interested to see what happens, to see if anything gets shaken up. Our theater is not a bad theater, besides the projection issues. We got new seats recently. Those are very nice in a lot of the big in theaters. It has a lot of potential. We have a good population to sustain a theater.
Well, we do. We really do.
Right movies.
And that's part of the thing. And that's probably, hopefully, some of the benefit of having AMC as the bigger chain. Years and years ago, I kind of knew the manager who ran the Fox Theater downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason is because I was dating a girl who was working there at the time. So I would go in to hang out for about an hour before the movie was out so that she could do her cleanups and ticket count and all that. And so he and I would get to talking about stuff. And really, it's, you know, he doesn't have a say of what movies come to the theater. It's whatever the marketing, distributor the distributor person brings. Is for the theater chain negotiates with the distributor to say, hey, we want this movie, this movie, and this movie to come to our theater. And sometimes you get some really great movies, and sometimes you get a lot of duds, and sometimes you get movies that are like, well, why is this one coming here? Well, our market research indicates that this one will do fine in Hayes, Kansas, and should play for 16 months. And sometimes that's what happens.
It does.
Maybe with AMC making this purchase, 12 Years a Slave will come to Hayes.
I would really like that.
Or movies like that. Or Selma would come to Hayes.
That would be my hope. The only thing that worries me is that Salinas Theater was also a Starplex, and they got Selma and like 12 Years a Slave and things like that. So I would hope.
Well, but again, let's look at 35 theaters. And so from that standpoint, which of your 35 theaters is making the most money?
Sure.
So maybe let's be conservative and put Selma in Salina, or 12 Years a Slave in Salina, and let's not put it in Hayes, because even though it does good business, and I knew the person that was the manager of the mall cinema when it was still owned by Dickinson, and he said it was one of their most profitable cinemas, one of the most popular profitable theaters for Dickinson in that region.
Yeah.
So maybe with AMC buying this, they'll be able to take a little bit of risk and say, yeah, we've got some extra money to go ahead and put this movie in Hayes, or let's get some other stuff in Hayes too. That might attract a crowd, because I went and saw, what was Michael Moore's conspiracy project, conspiracy movie, Fahrenheit 9/11. And it showed up to Hayes.
Really?
And I was like, holy crap, this movie is playing in Hayes. I'm surprised. And this was still, again, when it was owned by Dickinson.
Right.
I better go see this movie right now, because it won't last a second week.
No.
It lasted a second week, because I missed it the first week. The second week, I said, I'm going on a Thursday. I am watching this movie because I know by tomorrow it will not be there. And it was in, it was not in the very smallest theater, but it was in the second to smallest theater. And I went in at 2:00 in the afternoon, and I was the only person in there about 15 minutes before the movie started. And in those 15 minutes, the theater filled up.
Wow.
So it does show that, and this is the thing that people don't take into account, or the maybe the studios or the distributors and the theater chains don't take into account, is a lot of times these movies will bring in an audience.
Oh, sure. If there's buzz around them, or
if there's buzz around it, but you would think in a community like Hayes, a Michael Moore film would not do very well at all. And yet it did just fine. Because I talked to the manager afterwards. He's like, yeah, that movie's been doing pretty well in that theater since they brought it in. And I think it was there for one more week after. So it was there for 3 weeks.
So interesting.
I'm hoping there's some good things that come from this AMC deal.
Yeah, I hope so too. So all this theater, the movie ticket price got me thinking.
Okay.
Is Star Wars is coming out.
Yeah, it is.
Later this year. I'm thinking, surely this thing can crack some numbers on this all-time gross.
Yeah.
So I started going through like how many tickets would it take for Star Wars to get up into the top. And this is all based off, and so I started looking into it a lot. This is all based off of an $8.61 movie ticket price, which through the report on Variety won't hold for the winter. It seems that second quarter is always the highest.
Mm-hmm.
So you're probably looking at closer to $8.20, $8.15 for a ticket price.
Let's just round it down to
I didn't do that. I just did regular ones. I said, let's see.
Now, are you looking at domestic or are you looking
at
worldwide?
Domestic.
Okay,
just
so domestic. So domestically, in order for all-time domestic grosses not adjusted for inflation.
Right, not adjusted.
Star Wars Episode 7 only has to make domestically $760 million
right.
in the box.
That would beat Avatar, which I did at current price. It would take 88.3 million tickets to reach Avatar level.
I think it will do that.
You think it'll do that?
Because that would mean
that Jurassic World did 72.6 million at 8.61.
72 million tickets.
72.6 million.
I think Star Wars will have, because I'm not sure that Jurassic World has the repeatability that Star Wars will have.
Yeah.
I am already kind of planning to see Star Wars in the theater at least 3 times.
I'm planning on seeing it at least twice because my dad and one of our good friends are planning on going and seeing it in IMAX.
Yeah, I plan on seeing it opening weekend just by myself and maybe for a Zach on Film piece. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what we're going
to
do for that.
And then I plan on taking the family and going to see it.
Heck yeah.
And then because it's happening during the holiday time and Mason will be off school, we'll probably go see it again because I think he's going to like it enough to want to see it again. So I'm already planning 3 times to see that movie. So right there, just between the family, there's 3 times for me, 2 times for Mason. Once there's 7 tickets right there. And that's just off me and my 3 family members. So if you have a family and you have really big fans of Star Wars, which we know there are a lot of.
Which, like, the entire world is fans of Star Wars.
Yeah. I mean, Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones, comes in at number 46. From 2002 at $310 million made domestically. And that movie wasn't very good.
Mm-hmm.
This movie, if it's good, if it's as good as people think, this will shoot to the top of the domestic all-time gross because it's coming. The problem is, what is the exact day that it's coming out?
December 20th?
See, that's...
Or 15th?
I really think they made a mistake by not moving it closer to Thanksgiving. But again, by putting it in the 20th, you know that the kids are out of school.
Right.
So you're not going to... Remember, we said 80% of the box office comes in the first 2 weeks of the movie release. So...
That would be everyone is...
Everyone off. Is off on vacation. And it's not opening Christmas Day. It's opening 5 days before. And so...
December 18th.
Yeah, they've got 2 weeks that they can make a crap ton of money. And then, of course, you've got kids off for another 2 weeks after that to where you can make a lot of money again.
What I'm really interested in is what the drop-off is going to be from opening to second week. Because if there is a huge repeatability on it and people want to go see it in different formats, 3D, IMAX, go back and see it in 2D, what the drop-off rate is, because I can't imagine it's going to be
I don't think it's going to be big, because my guess will be that there will be a big push for people to go see it 3D and IMAX on the first weekend, or at least the first 2 weekends. And then after that, people are going to go, well, I'm not going to go see that movie in IMAX again. even though it was really good, I'll go see it in the small, in the 2D theater.
Right.
So I think we'll see some, you know, some strong, at least a month strong.
Yeah.
Going back to the all times, Star Wars Episode One is listed at number six in the all time domestics, at $474 million. So I just really think that it's a no brainer for Star Wars to just steamroll over everything.
Yeah.
This holiday season and bring in easily $700 million in four weeks.
And I'll be interested to see what it does worldwide, because Avatar is number one right now.
It
did $730 million or whatever domestically, and that was only 23% of its box office. It did over $2 billion.
$2 billion, worldwide. almost $3 billion. It's $2.7 billion worldwide.
Yeah.
Titanic at $2.1 billion. Billion worldwide.
And those are with some re-releases.
Those are some re-releases, of course. But Jurassic World is at number three with $1.5 billion worldwide.
Yeah. Isn't it crazy how big that gap is between two and three? It's over $500 million worldwide.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah.
It's so much money.
And it is a lot of money. I mean, Iron Man 3 is there at number nine. Frozen is at number eight. Skyfall is at 12. Trying to find the first Jurassic Park movie is at number 18. Star Wars Episode One is at 19. And these are, again, not adjusted for inflation.
No.
And I know a lot of people are going to jump up and down and say, but that doesn't count for Gone with the Wind is still number one. Yes,
I did
we understand
look at
that.
Gone with the Wind, adjusted for inflation domestically, how many tickets they would have sold? 191 million tickets.
191 million tickets in 1939.
Yeah.
So many. And Star Wars is at number two when you adjust for inflation. And so the 77 film at $1.4 billion. Is that billion or trillion?
Billion.
One, two, three, four. Hundreds, thousands, millions, trillions. Or hundreds, thousands, millions, billions. Yeah.
Yeah. Billion domestic.
And that's just domestic.
Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah. So we should probably have a bigger discussion on this in the future as it gets closer. But I think that the first three, and I'm meaning the prequel Star Wars movies, Episode 1, 2, and 3, they kind of shot themselves in the foot because everybody kind of knew where things were going.
Sure.
But this one has continuing adventures of your favorite characters from the first, second, and from 4, 5, and 6.
Yeah.
So I think that there's a huge potential for people that are my parents' age to really want to go see this movie, because they were, how old were they? They were in their 30s.
Yeah.
When Star Wars first came out.
Yeah.
And so there's you've got an age range of 80-year-olds all the way back down to 6-year-olds.
6-year-olds, 4-year-olds.
Who may probably, well, more than likely, will want to go see this.
Absolutely.
This movie. So
the potential for Star Wars making money this year is, it's kind of insane how much money just Disney. Look how much money Disney will make. They already have one movie over $1 billion this year.
They've got a couple of movies that have been really big, just between the Avengers and Guardians of the Galaxy. Is it? No,
Ant-Man.
No. It's not the two Marvel movies.
Oh, Inside Out.
Maybe Inside Out and Avengers have brought them. Oh, just those two movies have brought them over $1 billion.
Oh yeah.
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 So yeah, they're not hurting.
No, Disney is.
Disney has made some very wise investments.
Yes.
And they will continue to make lots of money off these properties for a couple of years. And I think easily they will make over $2 billion by mid-January off of just those three films, Star Wars, Inside Out, and Avengers.
You have to think, not only does Star Wars get to the top of the domestic box office, but they beat Fast and the Furious 7's
record on that. Yeah.
How would that not happen?
Yeah. Here's something else you can think about, Zach.
Okay.
Oh, by the way, the Smosh movie, just in case people had forgotten, their budget was only about $1 million.
Not very much.
No, it wasn't.
Not for
and you can tell.
Did you watch it?
I watched it.
Oh, we talk about that.
It is exactly what you think it's going to be based on the trailer.
Oh, great.
And it is nothing more than that.
Oh, great.
So, yeah. But here's something to think about.
Okay.
Avengers is a Marvel property.
Mm-hmm.
Inside Out is Pixar.
Mm-hmm.
Star Wars is Lucasfilm.
Mm-hmm.
What movie has Disney made recently that has been a success?
Frozen.
Okay, and that was a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
Anything else?
There a Disney animation movie that came out? that wasn't that frozen?
That hasn't made that much money. Well, there was a Big Hero 6.
Right.
That didn't do so. I mean, that did okay.
Did okay.
But I mean, when you're talking about, you know,
the only thing before that used to be Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah. When you look at the Disney all time, and Disney does a lot of live action stuff too. I'm pretty sure that Max movie is the dog.
That was a Disney movie?
I'm pretty sure that's a Disney movie.
Oh.
No, I'm sorry. That's Warner Brothers. Oh, okay. My mistake. Yeah, here we go. Let's look at the studios. Disney. Wow. Overall gross for all the studios from January to July, $6.6 billion. Universal leads Buena Vista. That's Disney. That's the distributor. They have Age of Ultron, Inside Out, Cinderella.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's what Disney's been doing. They've been doing the live action remakes.
Ant-Man, Tomorrowland, Into the Woods, which was really good.
Into the Woods was great.
I like that. It only made $63 million domestically, though.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that was a good movie.
Yeah. McFarland, USA. That's the cross-country movie. Big Hero 6, Monkey Kingdom, which is their Disney wildlife series.
Oh, yeah.
Strange Magic, Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, Not So Good, Very Good Day.
Oh, yeah.
That's with
Steve Carell
and Jennifer Garner.
Right.
And then Guardians of the Galaxy. So Disney, unfortunately, at one time, Disney was the king of all. You know, if it's a Disney movie, you go and see it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look and see what they're, I mean, now they're just kind of living off their past memories, right? Cinderella.
Oh, sure. I mean, that's what, and then before that was Maleficent.
Yeah.
They have another one. They have a bunch of Snow White one.
I think they announced maybe a live action Aladdin.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm kind of excited.
But all these others are coming from the
properties
that they bought up. Lucasfilm, yeah. Marvel, and Pixar, which, I mean, I'm not making them feel bad. I mean, they've made some fantastic investments.
Yeah, amazing.
But, you know, what happened to the stuff that you guys used to make?
It is interesting. Yeah. They haven't done as much anymore.
Yeah.
Huh.
I don't even remember what Strange Magic is. That's the animated. Really? I thought that was DreamWorks that released that.
What was that?
This is this thing about these like fairies and troll things.
Oh.
And I think this was a George Lucas movie.
It was.
Everything Deserves to Be Loved from the mind of George Lucas. Strange Magic came out in January 23rd.
I remember that now.
Yeah. We ran something about it up on the Major Spoilers website, but only made
$12.
Well, $12 million domestically. $12 million domestically.
Oh, man. Oh, George.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's $12 million worldwide because the movie was not released internationally.
Oh. Youch.
Opening weekend, $5 million.
Yowza. That's
and it had a pretty good, it had a fairly wide release. It had 3,000 screens. Haven't we talked about 4,000 is considered a wide release. So 3,000 is a pretty good size release.
God, their average pulling from theater must have been low.
It says here, $1,823 average per theater.
Ugh.
That's pretty sad.
That's not good.
But that's why we have $8.60 ticket sales, so that Disney can afford to make a movie like Strange Magic.
Yeah, and I'm sure someone loves it. It's someone's favorite movie, probably. Steven.
I don't know.
Quiet.
I don't know.
I mean, you've talked enough to people. Everyone has a favorite movie that's very strange.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So Universal is... Oh, and that's what made me... You were talking earlier about how do you think the studios are doing?
Yeah.
Following along with this Jurassic World stuff, if you go and look, there's a report about how this is the first time in many, many years that Universal has actually made lots of money from their movies.
Mm.
And, you know, past couple of years, they haven't really had a lot of really good, solid releases. But this year with Jurassic World and Furious 7, Pitch Perfect 2, even Dude. 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah, that didn't do bad money.
No, 50 Shades of Grey, $168 million.
I'm sure, you know what? I bet, like the digital book sales of that movie, it did really well on digital rentals
and
Blu-ray.
I'm sure. Now, of course, Box Office Mojo is only looking theater, so we don't know unless we had some kind of annual report or something that talked about this. But again, they're not going to tell you exactly how much they've sold, which kind of bothers me, I guess. You know, we can't estimate how many tickets were sold based on weekend grosses.
Yeah.
We can, to an extent, know how many comic books were sold based on iffy, strange math that Diamond Comics puts out.
Right.
But when it comes to digital releases, everybody shuts their mouths up about that.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody lets you know. Even on YouTube, when you see the magic 301 number.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's YouTube going back and saying, we're calculating to make sure that all of these are actual real numbers before we update the total. So, you know, something on a YouTube video could sit at 301 for weeks while they retabulate all the numbers before they update that to 27,000 or whatever views that they have. So it's really crazy stuff in trying to break down numbers in this industry.
Yeah.
And again, a lot of it's just a estimate, you know, the Nielsen ratings.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that's all based on estimates.
Mm-hmm. You're just saying it's a sample.
Yeah. And of course, the larger your sample, the more accurate the numbers, but still you're looking at, in a city of Hayes, maybe one or two households will be a Nielsen household during a sweeps period.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Oh yeah.
So you've got two households representing 30,000 plus households in the city.
Yeah. Once you figure out how many people they actually need to do a sample size of America, it's like, well, come. I mean, I guess if your math is right, but that seems really low.
Well, it can be skewed because if people are filling out the paper diaries like we do.
Yeah.
Maybe you forget to put something in, or maybe you forgot to write something down, or maybe you're just, hey, I really like this show, so I'm going to write it in even if I didn't watch it, is really skewing the data. Mm-hmm. So lots of numbers things to talk about. I don't know if this is everywhere you wanted to go on this.
No, I covered pretty much all that I wanted to, and then we did a little bit more. So I'm really happy with it. Are you happy with it?
I guess, sure. I hope our listeners are happy.
I think it's a little different of a conversation, but these are things we kind of talk about normally.
Yeah.
Even if we're not recording it. So I hope you guys found this episode of Zach on Film interesting. I would think we're kind of going to get back to a movie sometime or another. I think all of our schedules were aligned.
Oh, yeah.
Cosmic entity and Jupiter and Venus and our schedules will line up.
We are at Nerdtacular today.
Yep.
On this release, providing that. Oh, man. So people are like, well, how come you don't do these shows? How come this show isn't being released? How come this show isn't being released while you're out? It's like, okay, I've got a system here that will supposedly automatically upload the show when I'm gone. But as this weekend proved, I left the house in the morning, and thankfully the show had gone up. But an hour and a half later, the power went out in the city.
Did your power go out too?
Ours did, because I came back and the computer had shut down and the hard drives had shut down, but the power was back on in the house. So we were not out as long as you were. So I can go out of town and power could go out and a show doesn't get released on time.
Yeah.
Or oftentimes with this software that I use, sometimes it doesn't work the way it should and doesn't wake up the computer from sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So I just assume not release something. So if everything did go right and you're listening to this right now, things worked, keeping our fingers crossed.
Yay.
But, so that's why we're not releasing a lot of our shows this week, or while a couple of the shows are released, and not others this week.
Right.
But when we look ahead,
future releases, this week is
Mission Impossible,
which that,
I kind of want to see
it. I'm interested in it.
It's going out to 3,800 theaters.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise does a lot of his own stunts.
It's on side of a plane.
It's also got Vacation, which looks just awful.
I think it looks hilarious.
Have you ever seen the original Vacation?
Yeah.
It just looks like a pale imitation of that.
It looks, but they addressed that in the trailer.
I know.
And it's funny.
All right. Next week, Fantastic Four.
Yep, Fantastic
Four.
So
that's what we will definitely be seeing.
Absolutely. And then, I mean, do it for me, Straight Outta Compton. Heard good things out of it so far.
If it comes here, we can do that instead of A Man from U.N.C.L.E. And I think that might be our last film, right? No,
because
all that's next
that's
after
the
that
end
is
of the summer stuff.
Yeah,
and
American
start trickling in.
American Ultra and Hitman Agent 47.
Ooh, I kind of want to see American Ultra. It looks funny.
And then you have Regression, Sinister 2, We Are Your Friends, We Are Your Friends. And then Labor Day weekend, Jane Got a Gun, Kitchen Sink, No Escape, The Transporter Refueled. Oh, no. Seriously? And then A Walk in the Woods.
Yeah, so it kind of tapers off here. We're getting close to the end of the summer.
So I think we're going to wrap it up with Fantastic Four, yeah, and then straight out of Compton, and then get back into regular
shows, and then filter in the big releases as they come out.
You know, Straight out of Compton says it's a wide release, so there's a very good chance we will get it.
There's been some good press behind it.
I do want to see that, though.
Yeah, it looks good.
Yeah.
Okay, so hope you enjoyed this episode about numbers and financials and stuff of movies. Hope you enjoyed that. If you did, have majorspoilers.com and give your thoughts and what you liked about this conversation. If you have any more ideas or links to stories, you can find them over there at majorspoilers.com. And we'll be getting back to film discussion, actual films, in the coming weeks.
More talk like this.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Majorspoilers.com. Click on the Amazon.com link. Do all your back-to-school shopping. It's not going to cost you any extra. You don't have to go wait in line at Walmart. But a little bit, we'll come back to Major Spoilers. They're not gonna charge you extra to help Major Spoilers. You're just doing us a solid.
Well, and it's kind of like the movie ticket. You support the show that you like Critical Hit or Zach on Film, by becoming a Major Spoilers VIP.
Yeah.
And then it trickles down and allows us to do other things, like do the website and do other shows and to pay people to do their jobs. So
you know, it all comes back to help more things get created
for you.
Yeah, for you. So that's it for this episode of Zach on Film. We'll see you next week.
This podcast is copyright 2015 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.